and Mrs. McRae has to go home. She's afraid Hubbard come home won't find her there.
But I would like you to leave just a little bit of the tape so that it can finish off about this cuckoo's and when it was
okay.
So forth, because he knows he was here before even there was a cuckoo's when they used to have to walk to work.
Okay, then.
Okay. Bye now.
Judy just took 3 or 4 exposures of the boys in the mess here eating tonight. Your name, please? What is your name? Benovich? Penovich. And yours? Alan?
Breeze.
Breeze. Alan Breeze? Arnold Breeze. Dave Johnson? Ralph? Ralph Moran? Marvin Rhodes?
Ted Leonard?
Delbert Wells? Yeah, I know you, Delbert. Mm-hmm. George La Serena? Bill Somers from California? Gus Larson from Fairbanks? Oscar Travers?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm. All right, that's the boys in the picture for Judy when she has to identify you fellas. In the background was our chef here.
Is it
Saunders? Simpson. Mm-hmm. THOMAS. That's the third from the end. Now.
Judy just took a picture of the Mr. Simpson, the cook, ringing the dinner bell for the men to come in and sit down at the table.
On these highways, you have... That noise you hear is an engine starting. We're going for a ride in a new Econoline Chevrolet.
Cuts in right.
We even got radio way out here in the wilderness.
Oh, yeah.
Now we're out here at, Chattanooga Dredge, and Judy's going to get out and take a few pictures and a little yarn about this F.E. Dredge. It'll probably be their last year here, from all indications from the U.S. Smelting and Refining Company. We're about 30 miles from Fairbanks at this point on the Steese Highway, just above the town of Chattanooga. We're riding in Myrna McRae's car now out on the Chattanooga tailing piles. And the FV company is finishing up this year.
Well, you can know while you're driving. Get our car.
You can see an old town from here, can you? I think you can see old town.
The old town was moved about 2 or 3 times from its own site.
Back. Do you remember McFarland, old man McFarland?
Well,
he used to have his home about there on his ground. I think the company's on his ground now.
We just went through it last summer.
The company went through his ground, was rich. He was good.
Yeah, that's the trouble. Most of the fellas that hailed up here in the early days never got anything out of it.
No.
Oh.
Well, he held out on the company. He wanted a certain price, you know, for his claims, and the company didn't want to give it to him. And he held out to the last.
Yeah, some of them held out and then didn't get anything.
Yeah, then the company went around and claimed. There's some claims over in El Dorado, then the company went around him. Yes, I know that Kim Gilmore and Fox.
Isn't that pretty? That's now what the tale of the drag line over here. Isn't that pretty? It's a beautiful airfield over there. Well, they have the airfield for the companies to take all these tailings and make really a wonderful airfield, wouldn't it?
Or they could have a 2-mile long runway here.
Yes.
Well, there's one thing good comes out of it. After they get the gold out, they can level it out and use it for airplane fields.
Yeah, there's one thing you'd never have trouble with this ground once you level these tailings. There's no more permafrost or anything else. Never move, never heave or move.
See that river there? See now the tailings down here?
The other two, you see, didn't have juice on them. The juice didn't get to them. But she turned this one over. See, you can see that it's all scorched inside.
The other
pump, there was another barge behind it here too, with another pump on it, you know, tied to it.
Now you
that turned upside down too.
You 1300 volt on those or 660?
2300.
Well, they burn quick, 2,300
there. Oh, yeah, you ought to see that power cable up on the tailings there. Burn, she burned about 40, 50 feet over. She was blowing up in the air there, black smoke.
Do you know, I think the farm there is going down here. I see fish jumping there.
Bubbles.
There aren't any fish in there?
I don't know.
How would they get into this side?
Oh, they can't get in.
Oh, they can't?
No.
Oh, they can get through the creek.
Well, if the creek was open, they'd have been only
there.
No, we just stopped at Chattanooga Trading Post here. And what's his name, Judy?
Oh, Otto.
Bupening.
Bupening.
He calls himself Bupening. He spells it B-U-B-E-N-I-C-E-K, Bupening. He calls himself Bupening.
He's got a lot of surplus buildings around here.
Yeah. The weather caught fire for him. Bupening was called the smoke.
There, sure. You're what you call it.
What do you call it, the civil defense?
Civil defense to volunteer.
That's what it was.
And let these...
Pulled it up with clothes and... You go over to the depot, he says, I need a truck. On morning, he says, I take the train out to scrap with me. Well, I went over there to the depot, I guess. You remember Jim Rodeball?
Yes, I know.
He was conductor there then.
I knew the boy, too.
And I went over there at 8 o'clock in the morning, and they had one car there on a calaboose. And they had a stove in the calaboose, you know, so I went in there and I sat by the stove. And I don't know how long we sat there, but anyway, the train started out. We got out as far as Fox, you know, and then she went out to Gilmore. And so once in a while, somebody would be on the tracks there and they'd wave the train, you know, and they'd stop, see, and have a chat. Then Jim would hand him some parcels that he had been buying for him in town.
Yeah, he used to run errands.
Yeah, then they'd go all the way out to Gilmore, see. Then they'd back the train all the way back down to Fox again to go up Fox Gulch.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you know when we got to Scrafford Hill? 4 o'clock in the afternoon. I went over to the depot at 8 o'clock in the morning in town.
Do you remember some of the crew's names?
No. Jim Rodeboy, I guess, is the only fellow I remember.
I'm going to leave this car here now.
Now we're back to the FE office and mess house here at Chattanooga after a bumpy ride through the tailing piles. And we saw the pumps, yes.
They were pumping out water out of the pond. We had an unusual lot of water this year and they couldn't get the dredge to go down so that they could work her, and they had five pumps there. And one day a big gale came and took the ice against the five pumps that was on the barge and turned them clean over.
Mm-hmm.
Now you see, that's why you've seen that big pump coming off the dredge. So we're hoping that can get the water down.
Well, that pipe's about 2.5 feet in diameter, isn't it?
Oh, I don't know. I wouldn't know anything
large
about that. It's a large one.
Now we're going back up to McCrae's house in a few minutes.
Somebody contributed a lot, you know, to the economy of Alaska.
This is Mr. Murdy McCrae, and we've just had a wonderful lunch here in Mrs. McCrae's house. And Judy's full of watermelon, and so am I. So Mr. McCrae now is going to tell us a little bit about some things around Chattanooga.
What do?
What year?
Well, the dredge started on in July of 1928. And I was up here, I came up here first in 1927, January. And I went to work for the FE company then, and I worked for 2 years till fall of 28. And of course, we moved outside then, and we didn't come back again till 1935. When I came back then, I went to work on the stretch here, Chattanooga.
You were Chattanooga
the first time? Yes, I worked on the Davidson Ditch, when they were digging the Davidson Ditch on the Scrapper Tunnel.
You weren't with them the first time?
No, my wife didn't come up with me till 1935.
Chattanooga.
The Davidson Ditch.
Yeah.
And the Scrafford Tunnel.
What about the horses you used to work with at that time?
We had horses working in the Scrafford Tunnel, yes. Yeah, we used to have, you know, horses with me instead of...
On the dredge?
No, on the Scrafford Tunnel.
Oh.
At Fox.
Yeah.
But you can turn this off for a minute when you get... Where can you turn it off?
I don't know.
I started with the company in 1927.
Oh,
yeah. And the dredge started in July of 1928.
And she stopped during the war in 1950.
Of course, she was laid up during the war for... During the war years she was laid up.
Was it the same dredge you have right now?
Yeah, the same one. Yes.
Yeah. In the war years, of course, they didn't work.
No, she was laid up during the war.
What's the size of that dredge?
Pardon? It's 10 cubic foot. This year?
Yeah.
Well, it all depends on when we get the water down. We have the water to pump down, and we'll probably be getting started about June the 15th.
In about how many years, how many months will it be running?
Well, we'll be running until late in the season, probably November. We expect to get through this year. Two two more down at the lower end.
So there's five in all?
That'll be five pumps all together. Yeah.
And how fast, how much do they pump?
Oh, well, I couldn't tell you offhand. I couldn't, I couldn't, I would have to, that would have to be measured.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, the guy said that it was about 35,000 a minute.
No, not that much. But it would have to be measured for an accurate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
let's see.
Yeah,
thank
you.
That's
how you
want to
know
here,
you know?
Well, what I would ask, Mr. Trey, what did you think will replace this vanishing mining industry up here? Do you think it could ever something take its place?
Well, I don't think so, Harry. The only thing I know is that if the price of gold went up, that they could still mine profitably here, even with ground that's left here. But unless the price of gold goes up, there's no chance.
Well, how about the other minerals and the other ores that are available in the stone?
Well, I don't think there's enough of that here for commercial purpose anyways. Barring the gold itself.
Well, I mean, they dropped the gold completely and had scheelite, tungsten, steel, iron, and other ores.
Well, that's scattered far and wide too. You see, and it was never as tractable as gold was.
All right,
it was never concentrated in one place as much as gold was.
Well, you take coal for instance. They can make 126 things out of coal. And don't you think that is a gold mine in itself?
Yes, coal. Coal is.
Body of coal here?
Coal is, and because there's so much of it, you see.
They make plastics to the dyes and medicines.
Yes.
And paint bases.
Everything.
And graphite.
Yes.
There's hundreds of things they make from coal.
Coal and antimony too, you know.
But don't you think something like that could replace the loss of this
mine? It could. It could, all right. Yes, it could. It could very well, yes.
You see, I stop and think. We had, in the early days, they stampeded to the west, Homestead. And as economics changed, it was no longer practical or economically possible to do homesteading unless you had enormous farms. Well, the mining was the same way. It come in the early days with the single miner here, the prospector, make a grub stake or make a few dollars. And then the big companies took it over. And now that is finished. What is going to replace it? That's the point that I was trying to get over.
There's lots of ground left around here that could be mined for gold.
Just
for
gold.
Gold, yes. If the price of gold went up. Oh yeah. But in the Fairbanks vicinity here, I don't think you could find any other mineral that would pay for commercial purposes other than coal. You know,
coal is one I mentioned, which I know there's miles and miles of coal.
Yes, yes. Coal and antimony, that's it.
And antimony is
yeah.
Two things.
Yeah, yeah. That's plentiful.
And of course, what do you think of this big iron dike over north of Nome, 200 miles north of Nome?
That's Lost River?
30-mile dike. They've prospected an area almost 30 miles now. They hauled machinery last winter all winter
over there. Well, now you see, there's tungsten all around here. All these creeks where we've mined gold, there's a certain amount of tungsten, you know, but it's not enough there for commercial purposes.
Well, what do you think of the oil? Do you think that the geologists know that there's oil in this area?
Well, I suppose there is, all right. Geologists is concerned, I guess, this year. And they're the only people that can find that, I guess, you know.
Well, don't you believe that before the oil is dissipated, that we'll have other energies, atomic energy, and probably solar power that we don't even know exists today?
Yes, I believe that. That'll put lots of that stuff that we're using now way back to make it obsolete, even. Yes.
I look for atomic now as only one, but solar power far exceeds that.
Yes.
Scientifically now.
Scientifically, yes.
And they're learning it right from their rockets and Sputniks right now when they put on these solar batteries on them.
Yeah.
By the time your battery, you can hold it in your finger or your hand, power one of those
just
things.
Just take that energy from the sun.
Well, I'm very pleased myself to come out and visit with you.
Well, I'm glad you came.
I'd like your consent, if possible, when I go back just to play it for probably one or two of the historical society where I'm going to give an example of what we're trying to do to preserve some of Alaska history.
It's all right with me.
And little Judy here, I've been taking her around for the news minor.
Yeah, that's good.
Because we have to use every means we can to accomplish something.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, that's right.
We've mispreserved some of the machinery and some of the things that we had used in the olden days. And they must have a place to put this. We need a museum. We have books and history. Where are we going to put that unless we get a park and we get a museum? We have a lot of old-time history that's very, very valuable, but where are we going to keep it unless we get a place to put it? I have thousands of little pieces of things that I could send in now to the museum to be preserved for future history.
Well, I just hope I have a little luck and get to visit the right people on the trip. I know there's a lot of good people, there's a lot of things available, but you have to find them.
You have
just
to
like
find
this gold
them.
You mentioned
that's
about.
Right.
That's
right.
There's millions of dollars of gold in the earth that'll never be developed.
Never be developed.
They'd never be able
out.
To develop the gold that's around here.
They've been telling me how much gold there is in a cubic ton of seawater, and I just wonder if there isn't that much in the ground someplace.
Well, there is.
There
is a lot. Pardon?
About how much gold do you get here each summer?
Oh, that's one thing I can't do.
Wonderful, Harry, that you did. We enjoyed you coming out all day here with us. It was very, very interesting, and we have lots of interesting stories. We could write books and books, of course, on our experience, my husband and I. And we wish you the very best of luck when you go back east, and we hope that somebody can help us with this pioneer project we're trying up here in Alaska.
Well, I'll say 30 on this tape. This is Harry Hughes recording for Igloo 4 and the Pina Memorial Park.
Now, this is June the 4th, 1963 at Fairbanks, Alaska, and I'm in the house of Mr. and Mrs. Irvina K. Reed. Old known pioneers from the early days.
And I want to ask Mr. Reed a few questions on this tape to take with me.
Now, Irving, you give your full name on here, and what year you come into Nome first?
My name is Irving McKenney Reed, and I came to Nome in May 1900. I came to Alaska in May 1900. I came to the Aleutian Islands first. I didn't arrive in Nome until July. I was 10 years old at the time.
10 years old?
That's right.
And then you lived around Nome for a period of years and went to school there?
I went to the first school that was ever established in Nome. I lived in Nome off and on for 24 years. Part of the time, of course, I spent outside. I went to college outside.
You're the only qualified mining engineer left in Alaska. How did you come to take up mining engineering?
I'm not the only qualified mining engineer. I am a mining engineer, but I'm only qualified mineral surveyor for the Bureau of Land Management left in Alaska.
And when did you get married, Irving?
We were married in 1923.
At where?
In San Francisco.
San Francisco?
Mm-hmm.
And then you brought her back with you. Go ahead and tell her how to come.
Well, she came, didn't come up till 1924. She came up with me in the spring of 1924.
And we went to Nome, and that fall we came to Fairbanks. I had the contract to patent the mining claims of the Fairbanks Exploration Company, which was a subsidiary of the U.S. Smelting, Mining, and Refining Company. Yeah, I was a past president of the Historical Society when we started this Pioneer Park, and I've been a member of the Pioneers ever since I was a boy. I think I joined the Pioneers in 1912, Igloo Number 1. I rejoined them in Igloo Number 4 in Fairbanks. I believe it was 1926. The full name is of the Historical Society, the Tano Yukon Historical Society, and it was formed here, I don't remember when, about 1959, I believe. 58, was it? I wasn't here at the time when it was formed, but I spent the last year as its president.
You've been very active.
Well, I believe we should have a building where our records can be stored, and transcripts made from them, and also where our tremendous collection of photographs can be put in some shape so people can see them. We have photographs going back to the very early days in Alaska, and these are things that are priceless and can't be replaced, and are really part of the history of not only of Alaska, but of the United States.
Now you described some of your observations of the game, and other things around.
Well, I was, for 13 years, I was on the Alaska Game Commission when Alaska was a territory, from 1927 to 1940. I was, for several years, I was chairman of the commission. And I would say Interior Alaska had the most game of any place in the world, except with a possible exception of East Africa. It was just extraordinary, the number of animals I saw. The species weren't so many as in East Africa, but the numbers of animals were about equal, I would say. People here present day won't believe me neither me nor my wife, when we tell about these tremendous number of animals.
Well, now, at that time, if you were a member of the Game Commission, were they still allowing game meat to be sold in the roadhouses?
In certain roadhouses that were in inaccessible places, they gave permits for taking a certain number of caribou and moose to be sold on the table, cooked meat.
Now, would you go back to Nome and tell me what you saw on the Anvil Creek Railroad?
Well, the Anvil Creek Railroad, that was the old Arctic Railroad, was a narrow gauge railroad that was built in 1900 out from Nome to Anvil Creek. Subsequently, it was extended all the way to Shelton on the Cousitrine River. That was about 87 miles from Nome, all narrow gauge. That was the most fabulous thing that was ever built, I guess. The intention had been to build it on to Candle, where there were, on the Kugruk River, there were coal mines, and the idea was to ship supplies up to the mines at Candle from Nome, and then bring the trains loaded with coal back to the mining industry at Nome, which was one of the greatest at that time in the world. However, they got as far as the Cousertrin River and ran out of money. It was Belgian money, but they spent so much building it that far that they couldn't go any farther. And then the federal government at that time had a tax of $100 a mile on the railroad, and that ate up all their profits and put them in the red. So it didn't last very long. Ultimately, the territory bought the railroad and kept it in shape for the miners to run out on with small hand cars hitched to dog teams, which was a very fabulous thing too. I don't think it was ever done any place in the world. I used to have a car and a dog team and ran out on the railroad. It was quite a deal. My dog team would make 9 miles an hour of that railroad. It was just simply tremendous speed.
Well, now, they started with wood burning engines?
No, they were all coal engines. They were originally, the engines came from the elevated railroad in New York City. There was no wood in Nome to burn. Wood would have been much more expensive. In fact, it was almost in the class with gold. No trees. Well, gas-driven locomotive was brought in by the road commission when they used the railroad to run their crews out to their various locations to build and maintain the roads. There, of course, everybody that could afford it had a little light gasoline engine on a hand car to, if he could manage it, to run out, but there was only two or three of them in town. They belonged to the banker or some of the wealthy merchants.
See, when I come on the Alaska Railroad, they were using those little gas cars everywhere.
That's right, but this was a very minor private enterprise.
Those are all mining. Can I lead down to Seward? What company started that railroad in Seward? And they built 70-some miles of track and went broke.
That was the old Alaska Northern, I believe. That was before my time. Before my time in this part of the country, I never saw that. But that was broke, and the United States decided on running the railroad from Seward while they bought them out.
No, I'd like to ask you, being a mineral surveyor and having a very wide knowledge of minerals in this country, what is your opinion of the development of those minerals, or what do you think could be done to create some economic revenues here to help things out?
Well, you know, under the present economic setup, I can't think of anything can be done. The gold mining is defunct because of the depreciation of the dollar and the set price of gold, and as far as developing other minerals, why, that same thing applies. The depreciation of the dollar has put wages so high that men can't afford to hire people to work on them, and to hire men with government regulations and red tape.
Well,
it makes it quite difficult.
Do you think that coal deposit in the Nome area is workable?
I say that is northern part of Seward Peninsula. I don't believe it is. I saw 100 feet of coal, width of coal, and I traced the seam when I was the territorial associate mining engineer for over 5 miles. And it's really a fabulous thing. Of course, it's a low-grade coal. It isn't even semi-bituminous. It's lignite, but it's a very high-grade lignite.
Better than the lignite coal for PG Alaska?
All about the same, I would say.
Well,
That's a very good. That's that runs maybe a little better. That's semi-bituminous, a lot of that.
I've been asking, since there's a large company looking for investment, do you believe that they could put in a plant or several plants here in Alaska and develop the coal byproducts?
Well, Alaska probably has the greatest coal mines, undeveloped coal mines in the world. But whether such a thing can be done is very doubtful, just on account of the high wages involved and depreciation of the dollar. There's a very good coal, semi-anthracite, that's up at Cape Lisman. But what are you going to do with it? They've attempted to develop that for the last 50 years that I know of, and have never been able to do anything with it. And at that time, there was a lot more capital to invest in that kind of stuff than there is now.
Were you down on the coast around Homer where that boat was located?
I have been, yes. In fact, I own property in Homer. Well, that's one of those things that petered out, too. It just didn't pay to run that coal after the big steamship companies stopped burning coal. They burn oil.
Describe the deposit of coal and the size. They're enormous.
Well, there's tremendous deposits down there. In fact, the people down in Homer go out in the fall and along the beaches and with a pickup and gather their winter's fuel supply. And it's just broken off and washed up by the waves.
It's both below sea level and above.
That's right. We don't know the extent of the coal all through that country.
Well,
the oil is now the main thing that's going to develop down there.
Coming to Chickaloon District, have you spent some time there?
Very little. I spent a part of a summer there at one time. That was right back in... way back in 21 or 22, I forgot now which.
I had worked down there later, just before this last World War, and I had seen an enormous amount of coal.
There's tremendous lots of coal. The Navy was going to develop that. That's a very high-grade bituminous
coal.
It's a high-grade bituminous coal. It's very good steaming coal. But the Navy then changed over to burning oil, so they gave up the mines.
Then we come on down to the Healy Mine. Do you remember much about how that mine was prospected, developed, and how Cap Lathan got a hold of it?
That was developed before I came here. A fellow named McIntosh. Had a company there before Cap got it. But when I moved to town here in the fall of 24, Cap Lathrop had already started his mine there. So I don't know the history of that. I just knew the people involved, but it was just incidental conversation. I never did have the curiosity to go into it.
Don't you believe that there should be some prospecting done or some engineering surveying done to see the possibilities of developing a byproducts plant on that enormous supply of coal?
Well, that's true, but that's what the state should do, maybe, and look into it anyway, and invite capital in there. But as I say, nobody's taken any interest in it, and I think the reason is that it won't pay yet.
Well,
someday it's going to pay, and someday all these coal deposits are going to be worth.
Do you think that the private money would have enough freedom to come in here and develop it without the state acting them out of business?
Well, the state would be very foolish if they did it. Of course, the state's done a lot of foolish things, so they might.
Well, we're in a position right now like there was in the early days. Right now, a new state, everybody's grabbing.
That's right. Well, there were in the early days, there was much more investment money. In fact, when Alaska started, there wasn't any income tax, and the income tax for many, many years was very low. So that people had money to invest, All their money goes to Uncle Sam now. The investment capital supply is rather low. If Alaska had become a state, oh, say in the before the First World War, we would have been much farther along and had a much larger population than we've had now. After Ballinger, under Pinchotism, had tied up all Alaskan coal, withdrawn it all, why, for many years, any development of coal was stopped. And for many years, any development of oil was stopped. And they just loosened up on the oil in the 20s, and after that, they loosened up on the coal deposits on a leasing basis. But by that time, capital began to get scarcer and scarcer. The mines were going into the hands of big companies. The cream had been mined off, and the capital wasn't available to do what would have been done earlier if the federal government hadn't stopped in and stopped development.
Well, do you have any advice to a person that would like to visit Alaska now?
Yes, I think Alaska is has the most beautiful scenery in North America. I don't think there's no place in the world, except maybe possibly some of the fjords in Norway, can equal southeastern Alaska. And the beauty of the Alaska Highway, the closer you get to Alaska, the more beautiful it gets. Not disparaging Canada any, but I'm sure anybody that would look at it from unbiased eyes would agree with me on that. And some of the roads, like the road to Valdez, that's the Switzerland of North America. It's just simply lovely.
They got a beautiful paved road from Fairbanks to Valdez.
That is right. Yes, it's around that. And if they'll ever get the one to Cordova, which they're very slowly pushing ahead, we'll have really something that's just out of this world. It's fabulous. That's all.
Well, I heard the people of Cordova frown on the road because of what's happened to the rest of the state.
Well, you get those kind of people wherever you are. They're just a little bit too conservative, but they have to give way to progress no matter what happens.
Well, Irving, do you have anything else to say?
No, I haven't. I think you've probably covered the whole subject.
This is a brief little talk here by Mr. Irving McKay Reed, and him and his wife are sitting here in the house, and this is Harry Hughes recording for a little tape to take along on the trip with me while I go outside to the States. And this is June the 4th, 1963, Fairbanks, Alaska.